Okay, hi. Thank you very much for coming to my talk about markup languages. Of course, the first question would be, how about you, the audience? Which markup languages did you use so far? Just shout some names. Okay, I consider SQS text encoding and not necessarily markup language, but it's all right. So I can see a lot of markdown, some HTML, and so on. All right. Okay, I want to talk about markup languages because I have a huge project going on, which is called TYFO. TYFO has the idea that on the left side, you can see the input. I'm taking text or markup associated with the text, as well as font files, musical notation, mathematical notation, layout description, and media files in order to compile documents. So it runs through the main component, which is the typesetting engine, which does hyphenation, line breaking, pagination, and all the layouting in order to produce files such as EPUB, PDF, and MAN pages. You can also say LaTeX is a little bit outdated. First of all, I need to talk about markup languages because on the left side we have text and markup, and what does it actually mean? What's the purpose of markup languages? So I want to have a definition of markup languages. And I refer to the Unicode specification. What does Unicode say about markup? Bear with me, it's a block of text. It's a little bit annoying, I agree, but we need some definitions here. Plain text is a pure sequence of character codes. Plain Unicode encoded text is therefore a sequence of Unicode character codes. So Unicode is this kind of mapping from numbers to Unicode scalars, which somewhat represent characters, what we describe as characters. Not glyphs, not a specific representation, more like the semantic behind it. Okay, in contrast, style text, also known as rich text, is any text representation consisting of plain text plus added information. Fair enough. So on the one hand, we have plain text, which is defined as sequence of Unicode characters, and then we have rich text, which has additional annotations in there. The second part says the simplicity of plain text gives it a natural role as a major structural element of rich text. SGML, RTF, HTML, XML, and TeX are examples of rich text fully represented as plain text streams. So it mentions some examples for rich text. I actually do not agree about TeX, but I will explain you later why. The important part is the final paragraph. They use special conventions embedded within the plain text file, such as less p greater, to distinguish the markup or tags from the real content. Of course, it's a syntactic statement. We don't care about the less symbol, the greater symbol, but you have some elements which additionally annotate this kind of plain text, because it's really required. Okay, hard requirements. I want to talk about hard requirements that are really necessary in order to comprehend markup languages. First of all, I really refer to Unicode. It's just the modern approach how we perceive text. Of course, we have various text encodings. UTF-8 is a general recommendation. And if you really think you only need one writing system, I don't care about your stuff. This is English, but not within ASCII. So you might be a little bit naive. Okay, second part. I don't want to have Turing completeness in the syntax. You can see some example here. This is plain text. So some of you might know LaTeX. There you have something like begin document, end document. All right. But here we have plain text. So you just write text, and then in the end, you just write backslash by in order to terminate the document. And on the right-hand side, you can see the output. Hello, GLT. Now, we also have boldface. So I can just write backslash bf for boldface. On the right-hand side, you can see that the representation changes. And now, I had some fun. because on the first three lines I changed the syntax of tech. So usually everything starts with backslash. That are the control sequences, you know. But in the first line I defined, okay, you can also use the single apostrophe, the single quotation mark, as a character to denote control sequences. So on line two, everything changes. All right, line two and three also change the common convention that we use curly braces, instead I use square braces. Everything is possible with LaTeX, a Turing-complete language. The issue I can see, and that's why I constructed this example, is this example prints hello GLT. Nice. Also line 8 says something like print hello GLT. Oh, the question mark disappeared. Awkward, okay, but then we have by, which we know. As it turns out, if you comment out the fourth line, that's the change between the slides, this is printed on the second page, on the first page instead of the second page of the output document. And if that happens, the syntax is invalid. So that's pretty shitty, I think, because we really have a basic understanding how syntax works and what are the structural elements. And if they can change arbitrarily, this really goes against our intuition. So I want to avoid Turing completeness in our syntax. A hard requirement as well is that the authors must not declare the language abandoned or deprecated. Okay, that's really trivial. I don't think I need another argument here. And finally, the specification should be available on the World Wide Web, accessible without a fee. So this refers to some ESO standards which are not publicly available unless you pay quite a lot of money. And since you might run into problems with your markup languages, then you might want to refer it to your specification, and if that has to be paid for a lot of money, that's not cool. The other thing is the World Wide Web. Why the World Wide Web? As it turns out, it's really not limiting at all. We have old books which describe markup languages, but we have this wonderful website, archive.org, which documents all those old books which document markup languages. So it's really not a limiting issue. These are my hard requirements. Only under these requirements I consider it as markup language. One example is also the Robert Morris markup language, which was a concept by Yahoo, but it's not publicly documented anywhere how it actually worked. Okay, soft requirements. These are more informal. I'm not entirely sure about how to make that technically formal, but no domain-specific language should be on top of a programming language. So here you could just consider, for example, this line as markup language. Sure, it's the builder API of Ruby, and it just says you have a person element inside, you have a name and a phone number, and you just annotate Jim and this number 555121234 with additional annotations, namely the elements name and phone, and wrap it into a person element. That's just the equivalent XML representation, but the line above already states the same. But then really, in order to understand which kind of information you write down, you usually need to have the programming language underneath, and that's also not very cool for a markup language. So, soft requirement. Okay, and then must encode document text files, and I really need to define this here. A text file, one technical definition could be a text file is a file which considers new line, caret return new line, or just a caret return equivalent. And if you use that as a separator element, you just get the individual lines. So if you have this kind of definition, I consider it as text file. Fair enough. And what about the document part? Okay, this is really something limiting in terms of what we consider as markup languages, but a text document is content with a paragraph as the central element. So we can consider other markup languages. We have music XML in order to write down musical notation. We do have ink XML. It's like you are drawing something and you wanna write down how the ink appears on the paper. VCard, common standard for context. Keyhole markup language, you might not be, I'm not sure you know it, but that's the underlying technology of Google Earth. And a friend of another friend, social network representation, even emotion markup language exists. Emotion markup language is a standard by W3C to write down what kind of emotional state you have. Okay, and how about JSON, YAML? These are data serialization formats. It's about encoding data more generically in order to supply to a machine and not necessarily has a paragraph as the central element. For example, also Jinja 2 is not a markup language because it's really the idea that you generate other content because you use it as a template language. Okay, so this is kind of my understanding of what a markup language is. We have some hard requirements and some more informal requirements, which I consider and describe as soft requirements. And now, if we study which markup languages satisfy these criteria, that's my list. Okay, so quite a lot of languages exist. It's pretty messy. Yeah, I know there are links to all the specifications and so on, and try to restructure this. I'm not fully done, and especially I cannot reduce it to 25 minutes of presentation. So, okay, we have this list. Fine. The approach I want to take now is to look at the history of markup languages. And in that sense, the approach is we have some plain text. There's no annotation in there. It's just arbitrary content. And now we want to annotate it. How can we do this? The idea is we take one special symbol, like parentheses. Parentheses introduce some special element that allows us to annotate some text. For example, this MDDTD is now wrapped with some element called bold. So this is considered now as bold. I can also do that over several levels. And then I can consider this as a tree. So essentially, you have some document root element. I didn't draw it here. But then you have this kind of prefix, and here you have this structure with the element. These elements are inside each other. And then finally, you also have the suffix. So you can consider it on a syntactic level where we talk about parentheses, how do we write that down, or do you prefer the less than symbol, and so on. In the end, everything boils down to this. We have trees that we can use in order to understand the structure of the document. Documents can be trees. So this is our example, and of course I can also write it in a different syntax. One of the advantages of this kind of syntax is people don't like the fact that there are so many parentheses. It's the classic Lisp argument against Lisp argument. Lisp is built of S expressions, which look similar like this. And then you have a lot of parentheses in there. People complain about this. XML took a different approach. We have bold and mark. So instead of just closing the elements, you have to name which element you actually close. So it's more difficult to screw up. And where did the entire story of XML, for example, start? So we do have the IBM generalized markup language. this started that way, that we have some colon here in order to introduce elements, and then with dot, we stop this element, and then the content follows. And here we can already see these ordered lists. So here an ordered list starts, then we have list items, and finally an end of this list. That was the IBM generalized markup language. What was following is SGML, the standard generalized markup language. And the idea here was to use this common notation of the less symbol, greater symbol, and here we have element names with attributes. Directly from SGML followed HTML. HTML was a specific set of elements that were defined and used for the World Wide Web in order to represent originally scientific content. I have some examples of HTML5 here. Mark is an element which says you have, for example, a search and you want to annotate this searched item occurs here. Then you mark it. Also, if you have temporal information, you can use the time element in HTML5. Now, XML. After HTML, XML came along. And I don't want to talk about the details of XML, even though it's very important. Just one interesting aspect. So if you have some element which begins, so we have the A element, the anchor element, which just starts and closes right after it. This is semantically equivalent to an empty element A. This is defined by XML. Now compare this with HTML. The BR is directly closed, so this text is not inside the BR. If we don't close it, we don't have this slash here, the BR is closed, the text is not inside the BR. What? Doesn't this go on and you need some closing element? But how about div? The div is open, this text is inside the div. So it depends on which element, whether it closes itself or not. And that's the difference between HTML and XML. XML has pretty simple semantics in that sense, even though it's correct. For example, DTD and so on is part of the specification. It gets complex, but it's much simpler than HTML. In general, this I just put this here because it's a very neat timeline when which language appeared. And we have essentially this movement that we had SGML from the beginning, then HTML appeared, and then there was this movement where it tried to use only XML on the web. And I think the main argument is, no, these old web pages we have should still be visible in web browser, and we don't want to get a syntax error, you didn't close the element for your old website. Okay, then we also have BB codes. In internet forum software, this was very popular. Many people tried to implement that with regular expressions, but these are nested. We have hierarchical structures, so with regex that doesn't really work. But BB code was very common, and you use these square braces. Okay. Then we also have LOUT. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, to be honest. But I also wanted to mention LOUT, which is pretty neat because it has this at symbol. This just introduces all kinds of elements. And then inside curly braces, you can specify more detailed information, such as attributes. But of course, the big one is Markdown these days. Markdown had the approach, okay, I wanna pick some characters here and use some structures which are very uncommon in plain text, and then this will be rendered into, for example, here we have a hyperlink. And if we just use asterisks and hyphen, then we have lists. The general idea was to take all those email conventions and wrap them into one common rich text format. And what does the author about Markdown say? So one asked, I don't understand why Gruber, he is the author, is so opposed to Markdown standardization after years without an attempt to do it himself, because different sites and people have different needs. No one syntax would make all happy. He is just against standardization. We have plenty of different markup variants. And he also emphasized this again a few years later. He doesn't like the idea of a specification. The awkward thing to me is that the original Markdown specification required an HTML parser, because it was always okay to just put arbitrary HTML elements in the middle of a Markdown content. So HTML parsing is really difficult computationally, I think. So it's not something you do on your weekend. And John McFarlane sat down and wrote a standard for Markdown, which is called Common Mark. Now, typical questions in this field are, for example, you have description lists where you have a term and then a definition for this term. Or you can also consider it like a dictionary. Is this possible in a markup language? For many, the answer is no. They just don't consider this valuable. And how do you write tables? Everybody disagrees on how to write tables. You have this kind of standard, this kind of standard. It really drives the community apart. And is it possible to annotate IDs to every element? So you have the convention in HTML, for example, that for every structural element, you can put some ID there. So you can always refer to it. For example, if in the web browser you want to jump to this specific location on the website, is this possible to annotate each element in your markup language? The answer is no for almost all languages. I'm almost coming to an end. So in terms of adoption, I looked at the files per file extension on GitHub. So you can just run a search with path, colon, and then asterisk, and then the file extension. And Markdown has two. It's MD as well as Markdown. And yeah, you can see the distribution of the files here. XHTML is really not that popular compared to HTML. Restructured text is actually pretty successful due to the Sphinx documentation generator. ASCII-Doc is commonly used for books, for example. The syntax of OrgMoog is also visible here. And here we have a new markup language from Typist. Also, Laut is even can be found on GitHub. Yeah, LT. But there is no clear mapping between markup language and file extension. Okay, in terms of tooling, you can use Pandoc, which is really nice. You can generate an output document based on some input document, and it can convert between various markup languages. I also looked into TreeSitter. It's really specific, and yeah, it might be helpful to extend that to markup languages. It's mostly used for programming languages these days, but it has some error tolerance, which is pretty nice. And I have some projects on my own going on. I'm over time, so I will skip that. Yeah, my conclusion is we can implement separation of concern. We have syntax and semantic. These can be considered differently. Semantic asks which element do we want to describe. Syntax just asks which symbols do we use. And then you might even end up in keyboard discussions. And yeah, we need more tools to convert between markup languages. You should always be able to use the markup language you want. And yeah, if you have the tree, it's pretty simple compared to writing the parsers for the markup languages. And if you just care about the semantics, HTML5 is a pretty nice model, or also the Tech Encoding Initiative provides a pretty nice standard. I want to sum this up in a markup report that will be published until summer. And thank you.